Good morning. So obviously it's Mother's Day, and I'm going to start with a poem called The Mother. I want you to try to put yourself in the mother's place and pay attention how you feel about the child. And this is an older poem, so some of the wording may seem unfamiliar, but just kind of go with it. Here I lean over you, small son, sleeping, warm in my arms, and I con to my heart all your dew-fresh charms. As you lie close in my hungry hold, your hair like a miser's dream of gold, and the white rose of your face far fairer, finer, and rarer than all the flowers in the young year's keeping. Over lips half-parted, your low breath creeping is sweeter than violets and April grasses. Though your eyes are fast shut, I can see they're blue, splendid and soft as starshine in heaven, with all the joyance and wisdom given from the many souls who have staunchly striven through the dead years to be strong and true. Those fine little feet in my worn hands holden, where will they tread? Valleys of shadow or heights dawn red? And those silken fingers, O wee white sun, what valorous deeds shall by them be done? In the future that yet so distant is seeming to my fond dreaming. What words all so musical and golden, with starry truth and poesy olden, shall those lips speak in the years oncoming? O child of mine with waxen brow, surely your words of that dim tomorrow, rapture and power and grace must borrow from the poignant love and holy sorrow of the heart that shrines and cradles you now. 2/3 done. Some bitter day you will love another, to her will bear love, gifts, and woo her, then I must share you and your tenderness, now you are mine, from your feet to your hair so golden and fine. And your crumpled fingertips, mine completely, wholly and sweetly. Mine with kisses deep to smother, no one so near to you now as your mother. Others may hear your words. Hold on a minute. It gets harder when you can't see the page. That doesn't help either. Others may hear your words of beauty, but your precious silence is mine alone. Here in my arms I have enrolled you, away from the grasping world I fold you, flesh of my flesh and bone of my bone. Part of the reason I have trouble with this is it reminds me of Caleb. But if you put yourself in the mother's place, how do you feel about the child? If you nod at me, I can't see you right now, so. How do you feel about the child? You love the child, right? Okay. Now imagine the same child is covered in food, paint, marker, mud, or something that isn't mud but is similar. Does this change how you feel about the child? Not really. Romans 5 and 8, but God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we are yet sinners, Christ died for us. So we were covered in mud. We are in a similar situation. Now, you've cleaned him up. You've got rid of the dirty clothes. He's had a bath. He has fresh pajamas on. He smells like Johnson's baby shampoo. Now, is he any less precious now because he was a mess a little while ago? No, he isn't. In Isaiah it says, "Come now and let us reason together, saith the Lord. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be white as snow. Though they be red like crimson, they shall be as wool." So it doesn't matter that he was a mess. He's still precious. We still love him. This time, imagine that this same scenario has played out every day for the last several years. You've just cleaned him up for the 1,000th time. You tell him not to do that anymore, and you wonder why you waste your breath. Because you're certain tomorrow would be the 1,001st time. And you won't find out for another year that he's just doing it because he likes to play in the tub. So once you've cleaned him up, is he any less precious? No. Matthew 18:21-22 says, "Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me, and I forgive him? Till seven times? Jesus saith unto him, I say not unto thee until seven times, but until 70 times 7. I was thinking about this a little earlier, and I was doing some math in my head, and I thought I'd be past that about month 8 if I only needed forgiven twice a day. And I started January 1st. About month 8, I'd be past the 70 times 7. Now, when I had you put yourself in the mother's place, you were really taking God's place. But that's not really where I want you now. He's our father, but in some ways he acts as our mother. Matthew 23 talks about, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets and stonest them which are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered my children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and ye would not. So that's kind of a motherly image of God the Father. But now I want you to think of yourself as the child. You're the child that was covered in mud or whatever. You're the child who had to get cleaned up. You're the child that did that over and over and over. We know we are children of God. John 1, starting verse 11, says, He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them he gave power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. So, when I had you thinking from the mother's perspective, how hard was it to forgive the child? Pretty easy. Pretty easy to forgive the child. But if you're the child, how hard is that? I think that too often, maybe I'm judging you by myself. But I think I'm not by myself. I think too often we cling to the guilt and pain and struggles, and we think that we're not worthy of God's love and care, or that we're somehow tainted because we've had these temptations and sins. But it isn't true. Okay? What determines worth? Some of you, I think, attended an auction yesterday, an estate auction. What determined the prices that those things went for? It all comes down to what someone is willing to pay. That determines worth, what someone's willing to pay. That's true of the stock market. That's true of if you're in the newspaper looking at ads and trying to buy something or off Craigslist. It's entirely determined by someone. Is what someone is willing to pay in perceived value. Okay? So I'm sure some of you bought some things from time to time. No one pays more for something than it's worth to them. Is that accurate? Who bought us? God, through Jesus' blood. And as we just got done talking about, that was his choice, right? He chose to pay that. So, who are we to say that we aren't worth the price he paid? Who determines the worth? The person who pays. Do we imagine that God doesn't know all of our flaws? Maybe we've managed to keep some of our mistakes secret. He knows everything. Psalm 139. O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Them know. Oh, got it. Excuse me. Thou knowest my downsitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, you know it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before and laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day, and the darkness and the light are both alike to thee. For thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. So we know he knows everything. So do we know better than God what we're worth? No. Clearly not. Are we worthy? Yes, we are. But not because of the things we've done. That's the difference. We're worthy because he determines the worth. But we're not worthy because of things we've done, but rather in spite of them. So we're worthy because God made us in his image, he loves us, and he sent his son because we have Jesus. I did a search in the Bible for the word unworthy, and I found it in only two places. And the first is Acts 13, verse 46. It says, Then Paul and Barnabas waxed bold and said, It was necessary that the word of God should first have been spoken to you, but seeing ye put it from you and judge yourselves unworthy of everlasting life, lo, we turn to the Gentiles. So some of the Jews... I thought it was an odd choice of words, but some of the Jews judged themselves unworthy of everlasting life, and that's one of the reasons they went to the Gentiles. It was always the plan, because God knew it would happen that way. But because they judged themselves unworthy of everlasting life, they turned to the Gentiles instead. I don't know how many of you are aware, but we have a tendency, people in general have a tendency, if we feel ourselves unworthy of a gift, we have a tendency to turn away from it. People do this really frequently with money. Everybody knows that if you win the lottery, you're likely to be broke in 5 years. But there's a reason for that. It's because you don't feel like you deserve that money. People ask you for money, you say, well, I don't deserve it any more than they do, so you give it away and spend it on things. And there's been research done on this. We're all comfortable with a certain amount of money. If we exceed that by about 20% or so, we tend to blow it till we get back to where we're comfortable. Unless we allow ourselves to get used to it, we just blow it till we get back to the amount we think we should have. Well, that's okay with money, I suppose. It's not ideal, but it's okay. But salvation is not a gift we can just go and blow. We can't afford to. The other place I found the word unworthy is in 1 Corinthians 6, and they're just talking about judging matters between Christians among Christians. They said, Do ye not know that the saints shall judge the world? And if the world shall be judged by you, are ye unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Nowhere did I see anything that indicates that we are unworthy of God's precious gift of his Son. The closest I could think of was in Luke 17, where we're called unprofitable servants. But if you think about that, it makes sense, because if you buy something that you love more than anyone else, will you ever be able to get a profit out of that? No, because there's no one else that pay for that what you paid for that. God gave his son. Nobody else is going to give their son for us. So, of course, we're unprofitable. See yourself as clean. Proverbs 3:5. I love the Proverbs. They're fun. You can just jump in and out of them because they're so short, but then you'll be thinking about it for days because most of them are pretty profound. Proverbs 3:5, Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. It's his assessment of our worth that's important, not ours. Proverbs 15:11, Hell and destruction are before the Lord. How much more then the hearts of the children of men? He knows our hearts better than we do. And along that same line, Proverbs 17:3, the fining pot is for silver and the furnace for gold, but the Lord trieth the hearts. So, if you think back to some time you did or thought or entertained some thought of something that's just horrifying to you now, something that you'd be mortified if everybody knew about, that you don't like to think about yourself, God knows about that. Every instance. But He also sees every good and kind deed. Every time you empathize with someone or comfort someone. Every time you're generous, every time you're gracious, you overlook someone's faults. All the good deeds you do, He sees all of those. And we tend to forget those. We'll focus on that negative thing because that's almost leaves a scar. So we think about it more. He sees all these good things. He sees it all. He knows you inside and out. And He loves you just like a mother loves her child. Excuse me. We went out to eat last night, and I left the table for, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes. Went to the bathroom. I come back and Caleb runs up at me. Yeah. It doesn't matter how many times he's naughty. So I envision God doing that same thing when we return to Him. So why do we hold on to our guilt and our shame and our struggle? Are we afraid that if we don't beat ourselves up, we'll become proud? More likely, we beat ourselves up and become proud that we've beat ourselves up. It's a deception. If we're really beaten down, we must be righteous. Not true. If we have Christ, then we are clean. End of story. There is no gray area. We need only remember that Christ paid our way to remain humble. But if we keep looking down on ourselves because of failings, we fail again. Because we fail to see how we take after Him. All those good qualities I listed that He sees, we need to see those too. We need to enjoy our progress. You know, the root word for enjoy is rejoice. That's where the Latin came from. We lose our joy if we wallow in that. What does the gospel mean? Good news. Proverbs 25:25, as cold waters to a thirsty soul, so is good news from a far country. As cold waters to a thirsty soul. I find it a little bit ironic that I'm here trying to tell you to let go of all this stuff and be happy. You're a mess. But over the last week or two, it's been mentioned a couple of times in class how Christians should be pretty positive people. And I think we try, but we're a little bit of a contradiction because we cling to our guilt even as we tell people that we're so thankful for God for helping us get rid of our guilt. That doesn't make any sense. If you're thankful to Him for getting rid of it, then let it go. So I had an idea. It's kind of an unusual request, but I was going to ask you all to try it. Scent is pretty powerful as far as recalling memories and bringing up emotions and things. So I want you all to do a little exercise for me throughout the next week or two. Next time you catch yourself in some error and you ask forgiveness, I want you to imagine the smell of a baby, a clean baby. Imagine the smell of a baby, whether that's for you, that's baby shampoo or baby powder, whatever it is. You imagine that smell, and you see yourself as clean. And then allow yourself to be happy, because that's how God sees you. Clean. And He loves you. At the same time, the disciples came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus called a little child unto Him, and set him in the midst of them, and said, "Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted, and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoso shall receive one such as little child, one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck, and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea." That's in Matthew 18, skipping ahead a little. "Take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. For the Son of Man is come to save that which was lost. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, doth he not leave the 99, and goeth into the mountains, and seeketh that which gone astray? And if so be that he find it, verily I say unto you, he rejoiceth more of that sheep than of the 99 which went not astray. Even so it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven, but one of these little ones, that one of these little ones should perish." That's you. You're the one. Hopefully most of the time you're the 99 that don't stray, but occasionally you're that one. That's you and that's me. And he's pretty happy when he finds us again, isn't he? And just like when Caleb runs up to me, it doesn't matter how many times he's naughty that day. He's pretty happy. We were the joy set before Christ. That's what got him through that whole ordeal. And we shouldn't think of ourselves higher than we ought, but there is a level that we ought to think of ourselves. Because we have value. Because He loves us. The invitation is yours as we stand and sing.